Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
And welcome, welcome, dear listener or viewer, to another episode. Episode 10, we're in double digits, season 5, episode 10. It's the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week for the first time this year, the first time since Gear of the Year 2023, the host of the Tone Mob Chasing Tone Podcast. It is Blake Weiland.
I'm sorry, everybody. I'm back here to offend and annoy. That's what I do best, so here I am.
Quite the case. It's lovely to have you back, sort of after, you know, getting the update about you and your chest hair earlier in the week.
Yeah, you needed that. Or lack thereof.
Yeah, exactly. I am still surprised by that. For a man who's been bearded the entire time that I've known you over the last, you know, decade or so,
I couldn't even grow like facial hair like that was worth keeping on my face until I was like 27.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is about the time you would have met me, actually. It's right around that time. Once I became a father.
Oh, is it something to do with that? Is it to do with like something to do with loins and things like that?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. Right? I just know that's when it happened for me. But the rest of me still like a seal.
Wow, that's quite an image. I bet you're really fast down like water flumes.
If there's a fish at the end.
Well, dear listener, welcome to this episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast.
I warned them from the jump. That's what I'm here for.
It's true. So I very unimaginatively called this podcast episode Stomp Boxes. Partially because, you know, I've got Blake Weiland on the podcast. He's such a pedal aficionado. Partially because recently I got a Meris Mercury X very much on Blake's recommendation. And it sent me down this whole like, wait, was I sleeping on Meris being the best brand out there? I feel like I was always like, oh, yeah, they're good. But I didn't really fully appreciate just how absolutely incredible they are. So partially because I want to talk about those. Also, it was the Stompbox Delhi or Stompbox Exhibit or the Pedal Expo. It's so unclear what that event is actually officially called.
Yeah, it's a good question.
but it was the London version of that because, of course, that's a US event originally. Is that right, Blake, isn't it?
I'll call it a North American event because I believe the organizer is Canadian these days. And so I know that it's taken place up there. It's taken place in Portland, although I have not had the good fortune to attend yet. I take that back. I did go to the one that was literally like a week, maybe 2 weeks before the great lockdown. We were all sitting there going, should we be here? I don't know if we should be here. I don't know.
That's so funny. We talked, I think Matt's spoken about that on our podcast a lot, but the guitar show in Birmingham in the UK happened the week before the UK lockdown. And everyone was sort of walking around being like, should we be shaking hands? It'll probably be fine. You know, sort of getting pings on our phones being like, maybe everyone's going to die. And yeah, in the end.
Hey, if we're all going to die, let's die at a guitar show. Why not?
A great idea. I can think of, you know, a few players. Anyway, that wasn't even a super spreader event in the end, considering the time that it was at. The biggest guitar show in the UK. Didn't even end up being a super spreader event, but
good.
anyway, I've sort of digressed. The Stompbox Delhi exhibit pedal show, it was very good in London, in a new destination. They had it somewhere else this time around. Like they did it in Hackney, in a little venue in Hackney. And Hackney is like my favourite part of London other than Camden. I mean, it's poorly connected. You don't have the tube. You've got to get the overground, which is always annoying. But it is brimful of amazing coffee shops and venues and bars and whatnot. It's just one of those places that's a real hub of awesomeness and has a really artisty sort of lo-fi sawdust on the floor sort of feel to it throughout. And the venue they chose was exactly that. I mean, there were giant, you know, like toadstool murals on the walls and umbrellas hanging from the ceiling that had been made to look like mushrooms. It was strange.
But was it actually in Portland? Because that sounds like what you're describing right now. It sounds like you were actually in Portland, Oregon. Was there a lady with elf ears happened to be serving the coffee by chance?
Well, yes, probably. Maybe it was. Maybe it was some sort of wormhole through to Portland. But it was really good, dear listener and Blake. It was a great show. It was a little small. It was bring your own guitar. I don't know if the one that you had in Portland was like that.
Yeah, I believe that's kind of their thing, which I get from a setup perspective. It can be somewhat difficult to get. I mean, they've had guitars there before. I want to say maybe it was at their NAMM booth. They've had PRS provide guitars before. But I think at their standalone events, from what I know, they do mostly bring your own guitar. So everybody's kind of walking around with their guitar on their back, it depends on the venue. It could be easy, or where I was at, it was very crowded. So that was a little bit tough.
Same. It was a very big, it happened on over a Saturday and a Sunday, and it was very packed on the Saturday. The aisles were quite narrow, and everyone's walking around with a guitar either out or on their back in a soft case. It was just, that side of it was a bit of a nightmare. I'd be fine. Like, I get the idea is so that you can play it through your gear and get a better idea, but you're on a headphone rig, so actually you can't even really get a good idea of what that pedal sounds like. So it's
you're only getting 60% of what it really is anyway.
Exactly. But nonetheless, it was lovely. It was wonderful to get to see loads of cool effects. It was nice to see Chase Bliss there because they're getting on board with getting a whole European arm of Chase Bliss now, which is nice. So
yes,
could see them having some representation. I look forward to there being places you can go. Maybe, I don't know, just some representation for Chase Bliss so that you don't have to, you know, if you have a problem, you don't have to send it all the way across the pond.
It's that. And then the thing that stores provide that is really like one of the most important aspects of a store is somewhere you can go experience the thing for yourself before you're dropping, you know, $300-$400. It's, you know, maybe not as big of a deal in the US. I mean, $300-$400 is still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, but if something does end up not being to your taste, it's really easy to send it to Minnesota. For you guys, it's just, there's a whole extra layer there that makes it complicated. So having some representation will be quite nice.
Absolutely. Exactly. And what a wonderful, wonderful brand run by lovely people. So, you know, so keep an eye out, dear listener, if you're in the UK or the EU, Chase Bliss are coming to town. Mm-hmm. Before we get stuck into things, I just wanted to mention that this Saturday is the Alternative Guitar Show in London. In Kingston, which is, you know, just about London, at the Fighting Cox, legendary rock and roll venue, the Fighting Cox, is having this one day super small guitar show with Fidelity guitars, Thorpe effects, Mabry guitars, Zona guitars, Frederick effects, Molyneux guitars. No idea if I'm pronouncing that right. Good fuzzy sounds and a lost soul leather. So it's a kind of a micro show at a venue between 11 and 4. It's totally free. I'm going to be there. I think Guitar Pedal X are going to be there. So it's going to be lots of fun. We're going to make lots of loud noises. And I think there's even like a band playing afterwards. So definitely come down to that if you can, dear listener. And after last week, I was talking about the fact that, you know, loads of little guitar shows happening in the UK. And I got several messages from different people about other guitar shows that are happening in the UK. Buzzing Bugs are hosting a Cornish guitar expo with Horothir Effects, Emma G Effects, Seth Backus guitars, Grey guitars, Warning Amps, and a bunch of other things. That's happening on the 23rd. So literally the same time as the alternative guitar show. And there's another one in Northampton, but I'm going to have to put that in the group, I think, because my phone is the camera and that's where the information is right now. So, I messed that one up.
Airdrop it to Joe's brain. Come on. Yeah.
But yeah, there are loads of UK guitar shows going on at the moment. When's the next one for you, Blake? What's going on in the US? Is this like that time of year where you get loads of guitar shows in the US like it is over here?
It's so weird because probably, but the US is so big, you know, something happening in Boston, I'm probably not going to know about it or care all that much because I'm not going to fly all the way over to Boston to do it, you know?
Sure.
But I do know, it's not this time of the year exactly, but, and I don't have any details yet, but I was talking with Chris Benson and he is planning on putting on an event at Hallowed Halls Studio here in Portland, I believe sometime in the fall or late summer, which he's never done before, but he's thought about for years and, you know, he's a good friend. So I will definitely be there. If I can still speak words at that time.
Do you think as we're moving more away from, you know, sort of pandemic time, that there's an influx of shows or anything like that? Are you getting, like, is there a real buzz? I mean, I guess NAMM was back to full strength this year.
Mostly full strength. I mean, they still didn't have the downstairs. So it's not full strength. But as far as how it felt 85%, you know, back to normal. It definitely was down from 2020. Which sounds weird to say that we had a NAMM in 2020, but we did in late January. And that was, you know, full blown maxed out NAMM and it felt like it.
Yeah.
But this year was the first year that I really felt like, okay, it might still, I've been a little bit NAMM neutral to NAMM negative for most of my career. And this year I felt very positive about it.
Ooh, so that's good. That's good. Yeah. Do you think Nashville will come back? Do you think that's ever on the horizon again?
I want to because I love Nashville and it's just a cooler town to be in than Anaheim.
than the Disney capital of the US.
Yeah. But honestly, from a business perspective, most people I know, and I know this, there are exceptions to this, but most of the people I've talked to, and for us at String Joy, we live there. And we didn't even go to the last one, it was just not worth it.
I see.
So there's, you know, cause the cost is still fairly high, not nearly like Anaheim, but the benefit you get out of the time even is a little bit neutral. Now, granted, if it came back, we'd probably do it again at this point, just cause we are there and there's not that much extra expense.
Right.
But I have little confidence in it being, what it never really was. Even close to Anaheim as far as what business gets done.
I see.
It just isn't. So but they are doing some sort of
value to brands is much less.
Yeah. They're kind of rebranding it as sort of less of a trade show in Nashville. They've got Dame, what's his name from Shark Tank? They've got one of the guys from the US version of Shark Tank. Was it Mr. Wonderful, or was it? I can't remember.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the world's first true guitar string custom shop. The thing that I love most about Stringjoy is just their attention to detail, their dedication to making their strings the best in the world. And that's a labor-intensive task that they don't shy away from. Stringjoy are also innovative. They're always looking for new ways to make strings better. As guitar players, we've become so used to all the shortfalls of commercially available strings that we stopped even looking for them to be better, last longer, intonate well, easily. StringDroid bring all of that to every pack of strings they make, and they're available almost as readily as any other generically made guitar string. StringJoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock StringJoy yet, ask them to.
One of them that don't seem to have a lot of connection to the music industry, if I remember correctly. Maybe I'm misremembering. I can't remember which U.S. shark it was off the top of my head. But they're going to have that person do a speech, and there's like, it's very weird. They are doing something. Until you mentioned it, I had kind of forgotten. They are advertising. They're doing a Nashville NAMM adjacent program that's not NAMM. So I don't know.
We'll see. Okay. Well, you know, I hope it happens because I'm way more up for going to that one. We'll see. We'll see what the years ahead have in store for us. Now, before we start talking about things like Marius and some of the other pedals we've been checking out, I just wanted to do like a brief little bit of news with you, Blake. There have been two releases from two of the big effects pedal brands, probably the two big effects pedal brands, Line 6 and Boss, mm-hmm. have both had something out this week. Line 6 have put out their Pod Express, dear listener. I'm sure you've seen this floating around on the internet. It's been absolutely everywhere. Two separate pedals for the Pod Express, one for guitar, one for bass, a super portable. It's a pod that's not kidney shaped and it's super compact with just two foot switches that allows you to scroll presets or turn things on and off, obviously. And then you just have a rotary control for each thing, distortion, modulation, delay, reverb, and your amps. So kind of conventional pods, rotary controls in a world where all modelers are starting to have screens and touch screens and things like that. This is a very, very simple IR2-like setup in that it's all rotaries, but with all the effects as well. What do you think about this? How do you feel about the pod, Blake?
Well, as you can probably guess, it's not something that gets me super excited as a glorified, you know, bedroom/studio rat that just kind of holes up in his shed and makes weird sounds. So I don't really care from that perspective so much. But I actually think for the price,
$179 US,
I think you'd be well served to have a couple saved patches in it that you really like and throw it in your bag for a backup. At the very least, if not your main sound, if you really like what it does. I mean, like for $179, the ability that I'm sure this is me saying this without experiencing it. I'm sure it's not the best of the best in function because it's kind of limited as far as the interface goes. Like it is a little bit of like press this button, hold your tongue up to the roof of your mouth and like turn this to turn the volume up. There's a little bit of that going on. But what I was informed about that I didn't realize upon release is that there's a phone app as well, yes. Which I imagine expands that significantly. I think for $179, this is like everybody should probably just have one in their backpack at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that, and this tends to be the trend now, when we're getting affordable, compact versions of amp modeling and multi-effects, you're going to have a phone app that's going to open that up. And I'm glad it's moving to phone apps now and not plugging into a laptop because it's lovely having a desktop controller for things like Helix and GT and stuff like that. But that's not really how you don't have to get your laptop out every time you want to edit a sound in detail. Being able to do it on your phone means that it can be a part of your pedal board and still be relatively easy and straightforward for you to modify any tones, update, save patches. $179, I think, is a great product. Obviously, Pod have a legacy of being pretty decent, like a really good, affordable version of this. So, I'm here for it. I've got time for it. Mm-hmm. More stuff, you know, more effects driven than like the Boss IR2 is as an affordable right. version on that sort of, you know, whereas that's just dealing with amps and cabs. You're getting a whole bunch of Line 6 very good, very serviceable effects. This is a cool product, a cool release, and nice to have something affordable, because whenever they release something Helix, even when it's like the, you know, the HX Stomp XL, they're still like 500, 600, 700 quid. It's still a big investment to have something like that, even the smaller versions of Helix. And certainly the second-hand price on the bigger units isn't really coming down. So it's nice to have an affordable option from Line 6, who are, I guess, at their core, often an affordable company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really cool thing. It's a great piece of utility gear, and that's a great piece of utility gear, with some exception that I guess we'll get into later. Doesn't necessarily get my blood pumping.
No,
but
yeah,
you can't deny how usable and affordable this is for, and how like everybody can get something out of these. Everybody can.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like I've got, you know, there's a friend's kid is starting playing guitar. He's got the cheapest Strat copy from, you know, from Argos, which I guess is our, I don't know, Sears. Do you still have Sears? I have no idea.
Rest in peace. Sort of thing.
Okay. Oh right. Okay, that's not there. Like a, you know, it's like a catalog place.
Yeah.
Argos. It's the big catalog. So it's just a random catalog guitar, and it's like a little 10-watt budget amplifier with it. And my friend was saying, oh, you know, his son wants to progress. He wants to upgrade. He wants to have a few more options. Is there a pedal he can get or something? And I'm thinking, well, actually, considering the direction that amplification's going in, and considering he's going to be 90% of what he's going to be doing is in his bedroom, something like the PodGo is a great idea, because you've got, mm-hmm. you know, headphones out, you've got all your amp sims on there, and also he can dip his toe into all those effects, and it's affordable and it's compact. This is a great way to get started.
Yeah, I have a good friend who's actually, he's about my age, but he's literally looking to pick up bass. He's never right. played an instrument in a like real dedicated way that I'm aware of. And his kid at the same time is looking at guitar, and they were asking me, you know, what should we be even looking at? You know, knowing that I'm a big nerd for all this stuff. And I was like, let's talk about what you're going to do, because the amp world significantly has changed in the last few years to where because he was like, should I buy a little, you know, small practice amp? And I'm like, well, it depends. You might want a direct solution, because honestly, a lot of that stuff sounds better than it ever has. And if you guys are trying to practice together in the same house, you're going to drive the rest of the family insane if you're both on amps, and you won't necessarily even sound as good as some of the direct solutions. So this could be a contender for both of them.
Exactly. You're never going to sound good in a little transistor 10-watt amplifier. You know, this is a great way of sounding pretty decent for not mm-hmm. a lot of money.
The Katana is usually what I suggest in these situations, or a yeah. Katana, you know, one of the variants. But for somebody just starting out, this might be even better, especially if you're plugging into your computer to jam along with YouTube videos in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. A good product, but yeah, I guess a little bit dull. Not very exciting for people like us people like you, dear listener. We're all very, very much geeks, so it's not as fun to talk about something that's definitely designed as an entry-level gateway into the guitar world. That said, the Boss Katana Go also came out this week. I got to do one of the first videos. Thank you, Matt Knight.
Look at you.
For bass, they were like, yeah, just do it for bass. And I was like, but it will be the first video you have out, don't you? Okay, so that was fine with me, because it has two modes. You can like turn it on and hold a button basically, and then it loads up as a bass thing with bass amp models and bass effects, or you can just mm-hmm. open it for guitar. But the Katana Go, how do you feel about the Katana Go? Is that something that was on your radar at all? Do you care?
Well, I've got the headphone version. The Waza Airs. So obviously I'm into that idea. This looks like a little more my speed. again, it doesn't, it's not like I wake up in a cold sweat, you know, dreaming about these type of products, but still, again, kind of scratches some of those same itches, especially if you're in an even more, or an even less, I should say, a less ideal situation, you know, where you're like in a hotel room or traveling and you want to keep your chops up.
Absolutely.
These type of things are perfect for that situation. You know, now me, I'm typically traveling, traveling to Nashville, so I can find a guitar rig somewhere. Yeah, exactly. It's a little different, but for most situations, oh man, like this kind of stuff is perfect for, especially for the guitar addict who doesn't want to be without some inspiring electric tones. You know,
I didn't really realize that at first. I was really surprised at how many listeners on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, how many listeners were like, oh yeah, I ordered one. I've got one. Here's mine. You know, lots of people posting about the Katana Go. And I was like, huh. I guess I never really was too fussed about headphone amplifiers. Same reason, just because I don't have to be. But absolutely, if you travel for work or if you just want to have, well, anything, just if you've got kids, I guess, if you just want loads of great sounds and Boss make the best sounds, then the Katana Go is a really great product. If you've not seen it, dear listener, I've just assumed knowledge there. So it's a dongle based headphone amplifier and interface. So it just plugs straight into your guitar, and then you can either run headphones out of it or you can USB it into your computer and use it as an interface in your door. And then you have all the Katana sounds that are there, all their bass models, all their guitar models, all the different voicings that came on the Katana 2 version of the amplifiers, plus all of those effects, that massive range of effects, which I think are the same, the complete range of effects that you have on my beloved Boss MS3 are available on there, which is an awful lot. Bear in mind, this thing is sub £200. I don't know what it is in the US, but
I was just about to hit the Google machine.
A pretty affordable product. I had a few 17-year-olds complain on the video that it wasn't cheap, but I understand that when you're 17, over £100, nothing is cheap.
Yeah, McDonald's is expensive when you're 17, so yeah. I understand. Yeah. $119.99.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, it's going to be very difficult to get anything that will make your electric guitar sound like an electric guitar for less than that. Yeah. So, you know, that is the guitar world, unfortunately.
Yeah. That is the same price as, you know, we were at GAC 10 years ago, we were selling the Fender Rumble 10, or whatever it was, you know, the smallest, crappiest little practice amp you could possibly buy. And now you can spend that money and get every single effect that Boss make and all their amp models on a headphone amp.
That you can take anywhere.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. Do you know what I did with it, actually? It was quite interesting. I plugged it in. I put the dongle into one of my sends on my interface and then ran the USB into my computer. And then from doing that, I was able to like use it to reamp stuff, just apply it to pre-recorded, you know, DI'd stems and add all the effects afterwards. I was like, that is pretty cool. I could actually just leave this permanently set up like this and essentially have every single Boss effect whenever I want for reamping purposes. But it's good. It is cool.
I like that.
It's not a bad product. Anyway, those are kind of the new things, dear listener, for this week. But I want to talk a bit about, we're going to talk about Meris, then we're going to talk about Great Eastern Effects on this Stompbox podcast. Blake, I finally did it. I finally got a Meris Mercury X after all the gear of the year chatter, all your convincing, I finally got one. You have a Mercury X, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, right. You didn't just have it. You have one. Yeah. Talk to me about your experience. I want to know more about the Mercury X now. I need to, because we're going to play a sound sample in a bit, dear listener, but I'm just messing around with presets at the moment. So I want to hear, you know, how you're getting to grips with it, what you're using on the Mercury X.
Well, you've gotten to the Gregorian chants, I assume. you've gotten in there and you discovered those. So that's the thing about the Mercury X is, like, if you just want to plug in and go through the, I think it's 99, maybe it's 120 now. I think they've added more. Oh yes. Cause Yvette Young just did a bunch of presets with them too. So, so there's all kinds of presets. If you just want to plug in and play and experiment with the things that are already built there, you could do that for weeks, honestly, and find all kinds of crazy, inspiring sounds in there. But what I think is really cool about it is it's a platform. If you want to build out a reverb sound that has never really been heard in the real world before, you can probably do it in there. So it appeals to both, like, the people who are big time, you know, tweakers and knob fiddlers and, you know, junkies for this kind of thing. But if you just want a bunch of really great reverb sounds in true stereo, ready to go, it has that too. So it really is. It's a lot of money, but it just takes everything, like, the legacy of the Big Sky and puts it on steroids.
Yeah, that does seem to be it. I literally have only used presets so far, and that's all I've used to build the sample that we'll play. But I've only seen very briefly the way sort of the building screen works, because despite having, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. That took me a long time to count to seven then. Despite having seven knobs on this pedal, I just had to double check. Yeah. So many of them are, like, fixed in their application that you're doing an awful lot with the preset page knob, which also suppresses to save and to hold. So the screen is quite clever for the building things. It sort of has, like, bubbles that I guess are connected, and each of those bubbles represents a different element of the things that shape a reverb tone.
Yes. Yep. And you can place them in different parts. It's very, there have been pedals that you could build out big, you know, soundscapes or big, interesting chains of effects inside of in the past. But what hasn't been easy to do is to do it visually. Now, I can't remember if they included this on the Mercury X, but in the original LVX release, there was a, like, list mode and a graphic mode. And the list mode's the more old school, you know, spreadsheet style approach of trying to build this stuff out. And that is not conducive for my brain.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by iZotope and Native Instruments, two companies who provide the bulk of the recording and editing tools used by Guitar Nerds. If you have a home studio, or if you're thinking about getting into demo recording from home, then iZotope and Native Instruments provide the tools that you need to make premium quality recordings with ease and with virtually no equipment other than your guitar and laptop. iZotope make all the voice editing and audio repair tools that I use for the podcast each week, and Native Instruments Guitar Rig 7 is one of the best, most comprehensive collections of virtual effects and guitar amplifiers available anywhere. Use discount code NERDS10 on any product in the iZotope and Native Instruments catalog for 10% off their fantastic range of tools.
So I messed with that for about 30 seconds and went, nope, graphic mode for me. I need pretty pictures to direct me and tell me how to do things. And they make, for how complicated both of these units are, or I shouldn't say complicated, for how powerful and complex they can be, it's pretty intuitive to start just pushing buttons and twists and knobs and, like, oh, I see what it's doing. This is making sense to me. Oh, this, turn this, the reverb time goes up. Oh, and it shows me in a nice little bar over here. And, like, it's a very intuitive interface, even if it looks daunting at first.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think because it's not a familiar thing to guitar players, I've watched videos and people using it. I'm like, whoa, this looks complex. Half the reason why I built with the presets just to start with, because I didn't have that much time to get stuck into it just yet. And a whopping 4 foot switches as well, which gives you a tuner. They're including a tuner on there, which is
that's one great thing where I was like, I don't know if we needed that, but I guess if you can do it, Why not?
I mean, great. Yeah. If I'm going to allocate this much space, and dear listener, like it's a 4-foot switch wide pedal. If I'm going to allocate this much space on my pedal board, that much real estate's going out the window for a reverb pedal. Great that I can have a tuner mm-hmm. on it as well. But then you have the ability to bank. And then am I right in thinking I can assign the 4 buttons yep. to control individual parameters or two?
Yeah, you could immediately recall anything in there, whether it's a preset that's already built or one that you've built out. You can assign it to any of those switches and recall it immediately at any time, which is pretty useful. And also, it's like if you switch the preset and you're working in one and you want to turn it on and off, it's easy to see which one's doing which. You know, it's got the indicator lights and you know. For something so complex, I've only had to like really crack into the manual a few times, which I think is, I'm not that smart. So it tells you how well designed it is, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely super duper well designed. And it's so much more than just a reverb as well, because it has a little bit of crossover with the LVX. I mean, mm-hmm. like I was messing around with this with my keys player, Josh, and he was like, why is this called a reverb pedal when the bulk of what it's doing is delay? But I think, you know, it's not the bulk, but it's definitely, it includes a massive amount of delay functionality, pitch shifting functionality. You can do some like ring mod style stuff with it. It's kind of a multi-effect.
And human reverb, voices. Pedal. Let's not forget about that aspect. Human
yes.
voices going, oh.
Yeah, yes, perfect, which is exactly what everyone wants from one of these from one of these pedals. And it's stereo, which I thought I'd demonstrate on this week's demo. So I set it all up for stereo, and then it was only really when I was exporting the track I realized that every single guitar track I'd assigned to the same line on my interface. So I am actually only getting all the tones. Would have been so much better if I'd have actually assigned them, if I'd actually used stereo. Unfortunately, I ended up using a mono version, but they still sounded great, and that's testament to how good the pedal is. But let's listen to the sound sample now, and then we'll talk about that a bit. So every single tone has been built just with Mercury X. I'm just going into a sort of clean to edge of breakup Neural DSP Tone King plugin, and I'm playing the new I mean, not that it matters, this is so awash with reverb, it could have been any guitar, but
it matters to me.
I am playing the new vintage Pro Shop guitars, Guitar Nerds listener designed Jazz Buster.
Nice.
All on the humbucker in the bridge, and it sounded great. I really enjoyed it, even though that guitar has come strung with nines, which I find impossible to play. I don't know how people keep nines in tune. I don't know how you're just not constantly bending things out of tune. Really weird.
Some
really
people like to play with spaghetti, and yeah. I guess that's their thing. You know,
that's true. What gauge do you play normally, or just on a standard scale guitar?
Typically 10.5s. Sometimes 11s, but usually 10.5s. Hmm. 10.5 to 54s, actually.
Oh, right. So you do keep it pretty chonky on the low end.
Yes, yeah. I used to play strictly 11s, but I found that I can get, by going to the 10.5s, I can get everything that I like with just a little more bendy. Not too much. It's a very subtle difference.
I wonder if that's something for me to look into, because I'm always putting 11s on everything. But I have found since I got like my American vintage 52 Telecaster, which I'm predominantly using for like the demo things for Guitar Nerds and for any mm-hmm. other jingly things that I get asked to make. So I've just left 10s on it because that's, you know, what it came with, and it's a bit better to be in standard tuning and stuff. And I'm actually finding, oh, these are really good, just slightly too light. But maybe there is a halfway house. Maybe I should check out sort of some 10.5s. I don't think I'd go as big as a 54 if I was going to be in standard tuning, though.
I do a lot of dropping D, even when I'm most, if I got a guitar in standard, there's a good chance I'm dropping D.
Same, and actually.
And then it's also worth noting that I play a lot of Gibson scale length guitars, on like a Jazzmaster, for instance, especially one with a traditional style trim, I'm going to want at least 11s, at least.
I see.
If not 12s, that's just kind of where I am. But yeah, most of those 10 and a half sets are on. I'm looking around to make sure I'm telling you the truth. Oh yeah, they're on mostly Gibson scale length guitars. So that right. explains some of it, I think.
And what type of strings do you use?
I use the Orbiters, and I use all of them actually on like Fender single coils. I like the Broadways on most humbucker guitars. I play the Signatures. If there's a particularly dark sounding guitar, I like the Orbiters.
I was going to ask what is the difference between the Orbiters then? They're just brighter. They're still.
So the Orbiters are our coated ones actually. And which counterintuitively give the way we ended up doing them. We get more output and more brightness out of them, which is usually the opposite of what of you course. Get with a coated string. So they take some people by surprise, but that's why I stick them on my darker Gibsons for sure.
I see. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I just always use the Signatures. Just they're the blue packs, right? I always just use the blue packs.
Yeah, the Signatures are, I mean, that's going to be the right answer for 80%+ of people, really.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Including me, most of the time.
Very, very good strings. Anyway, let's listen to this Meris Mercury X demo, and then we'll have a little bit of a chat about some of the tones used there. I really forgot to like write a little drum fill for the end there. The drums just sort of stop. That's fine.
It's fine. It's totally fine. So let's, if you can remember, because there's a lot going on there. Let's go through some of these. And I'm sure the first thing that everybody wants to know, what's whatever. Yeah. What is that?
So there's a preset called Ghosts on there. I
thought that's what it was, yeah.
And I was like, I was looking for something to do a lead part at the time, and then I think I just like just chunked, you know, the strings, just you know, so, but no note, just muting the strings and just strum the guitar, and it went, and I was like, ooh. Mm-hmm. That sounds cool. I'll do it as like a rhythmic part. So I just played the track. And the great thing about that is there's some modulation on that. So everyone sounds slightly different. It's just a really interesting way of adding something kind of rhythmic on there. I mean, it's one of those presets that's so very heavy. I had like the mix maxed out on it. I think to make that usable, if you wanted to play any notes, you'd have to have the mix pretty low because it's just adding so much of this weird sort of, you know, like sort of voicing on your guitar. That was a weird impression, but yeah,
but I get it.
Yeah, that was good. I mean, it was a happy accident. And actually, I had a happy accident with another one. There was another preset, which I think it was called Interlude. And it was one of those things where I was just flicking through the presets and then sort of checking it out. And I found that one, hit a note. And I think the track was playing at the time. And I could hear, oh, there's something ringing out. And I paused it. And I realized that that particular patch was essentially an infinite note. It was completely infinite. It was looping and it was complete sample hold, holding that note and making it sound all gorgeous and reverby. And because I played it in the key of the track, I just left the guitar ringing and was like, I'm just going to put this to the start and press record and let it just run for the entirety of the track and then just drop it a little bit in the mix, fade it out at the start and the end. And it ended up being like just a really lovely atmospheric kind of sound, and really that sort of preset I would find really useful to just have. I know it's just a freeze, dear listener, I get it. I know lots of pedals have done that before, but having something like that that still has all the character of the Mercury X that I can just assign to one of those foot switches and bring up as and when was extraordinarily useful.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that as well. The main one, the chords one, can't remember the name of the preset for that one, but it was great because it gave me like a sort of modulated or like a tremolo effect on the reverb that slowed.
Is
as
that
the
mirror room by chance? Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. Brilliant. Brilliant patch, because it's every, you know, at the start of the hit of every note, it starts that tremolo fast. And then as your note rings out and the reverb takes over, it slows it down and it does it again, you know, super fast every time that you're playing a new note, which was great. A great way.
And it responds
way.
Dynamically too. So if you just, you know, finger pick real light, it won't be as fast of an onset.
Oh, so that's very useful.
It's very nice. It sounds, that's one of the most addicting, like out of the box presets is Mirror Room. It's like, this is, especially you plug that in with two real amps in the room, stick them as far away from you as you can get in the room and you stand in between. It's like, oh, it's so awesome. It feels so good. Yeah,
I bet that sounds great. I'm going to do that tomorrow. That sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, that was really good. It kind of, I used to really like getting that sort of sound a lot, but I had to do it manually. Do you remember the Ernie Ball pedal series they did? Kind of a sort of failed pedal series they did of expression effects.
I never actually saw any of those in person. I just saw them on the interwebs. So
right,
don't know how, obviously they didn't sell very well, but I thought they were a cool concept.
It was a great idea, but it was like, they did a distortion, a delay, and a tremolo reverb, which is obviously the one I'll talk about, but they just messed some things up. Like, you'd think if you're going to put an expression pedal on it, certainly on the delay, that's going to be rate, right? It's going to control the rate. It was the mix. And I was like, well, the delay mix isn't really something I need to change on the fly, but it would be nice to change the rate and be able to do this. So it just,
or the feedback, either of the two that aren't mixed would have been preferable.
exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was the same with the distortion one. It just wasn't up to much. But the tremolo reverb they did nail, because you could use it to affect the tremolo speed, the tremolo depth, both. And I think the reverb might have just been on a rotary, I think. So you'd set the reverb maybe on just a rotary just to be there. But then the tremolo, you could speed up and slow down, and you could set like how much as well, like how fast it would go and how slow it would go to as well, which was excellent. That was a really good pedal. And I love doing those sorts of things where you pick a note and then just ease off and it slowly slows down the tremolo until you have the note remaining through. And the Mercury X does that excellently without me having to mess around with an expression pedal.
But you can if you want.
Can you? Does Mercury X allow you to express out? Oh my God, it does. I'm barely touching the surface of how good this pedal is. This is the thing I have been most excited about in a long time. And I have you to thank for it, Blake. I didn't even realize when it came out how good.
I have people, when I talk about that kind of stuff, especially something I'm so enthusiastic about. And I've since started being a bit snarky about it, because I get people messaging me saying,
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I saw your post on this, or I heard you talking about this. Honestly, how do you really feel? And I was like, I already told you. I told you in the post, I don't make things up when I'm excited about things or when I'm upset about things. That's how I feel in the moment. And I try to express that honestly, no matter what platform I'm on. So don't message me asking me for my honest take. I already gave it to you publicly. but yes, I genuinely do love that pedal so, so much. So
yeah.
I'm glad you're finding use in it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. It is really good. Now, let's talk about another pedal, a pedal that you've had, a pedal that is as of yet unreleased, doesn't get released until sometime in April.
We're not going to get in trouble, are we? We're not going to get in trouble?
No, we'll be fine.
Okay.
We let the cat out of the bag on the podcast last week, and we are, of course, dear listener, talking about the Great Eastern Effects Co. XO crossover pedal. JD picked one up. We spoke about it at length at the start of last week's podcast. David Greaves, who runs Great Eastern, brought it along to both the guitar show in Birmingham and the Stompbox Deli in London. And I saw that Guitar Pedal X are doing a big old article about it in the Stompbox Deli roundup as well. So even though the pedal is not officially out there, I think it's fine for us to talk about it because you got one, Mr. Blake.
I did. I am going to have David on the show here towards the middle of next month.
Oh, brilliant.
And he wanted me to be able to, you know, bounce some ideas off and actually be able to talk about some of this stuff. And I said, well, what's the newest thing you got? And he said, this. And I told him this. So he knows. And I've kind of showed some people who I'm going to talk about this pedal already. It's a crossover effect, as you guys have described. I don't know how much detail we want to go into again,
refresh everyone's memory. It was only, you know, 5 minutes at the start last week.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a different thing for guitarists, but me as somebody who treats pedals like synthesizers, I kind of immediately was intrigued. Essentially, you can plug multiple effects chains into this thing that are sort of independent, and you can cross over or assign which frequencies of your frequency spectrum you want each of those pedal chains to be impacting. So you could put fuzz on the low end and maybe a tube screamer on the high end, or however you want to blend things together. And so as soon as he described that, I was like, let's go. That sounds perfect. And the reason I think that sounds perfect is you're not the first person that has had this idea, but you are the first person that I know that actually implemented it. I've had a few people hit me up about a very similar concept over the years and be like, do you think people would like this? I was like, I think it's brilliant. I don't think that every guitarist is going to need it or gravitate towards it, but bassists for sure and pedal nerds for sure who do soundscapey type stuff like I like to do. I mean, it makes so much sense. And I could also see it having some place with synth players too, you know, depending if they use a lot of effects.
Definitely.
It's a brilliant utility pedal. And I kind of alluded to that earlier in our conversation. This is a utility pedal I got immediately excited about because I thought of all the weird stuff I could do with it. So
this is it. It opens up all those weird like effects chains you can make on Helix or you know, Neural DSP. It allows you to do those real world pedals, which is really valuable for mm-hmm. people who really love their proper pedals. You know, it's
yes.
I think you're absolutely right. I was initially very excited about doing the bass player thing, where I'm like, oh, because it's got a clean blend on it as well. I was like, well, I've got like some drives that would be great on low end, and then like some fuzzes that would be great if I could make them have more low end character and then assign something else to the top end. I wanted to like build a more three-dimensional drive fuzz tone, you know, but being able to make the most out of something like the Frederick Effects Unpleasant Companion, which is a very thin, very buzzy, spiky fuzz, make that usable for bass by padding out the lower end with something else. Things like that are really interesting. But I think the place where this pedal is super duper useful is the soundscape thing, being able mm-hmm. to apply modulations, delays, reverbs to different parts of your tonal spectrum to be able to have the biggest, washiest, hugest reverbs and delays and still have like clarity. I think this could be really, really good.
Yeah, so I told you, I was like, if I come up with something interesting, I'll send you a clip. Maybe we can play it. And so what I did here was a little more just rock focused. And I had this done in like 15 minutes. It is not the most polished thing of all time. But I think if you're listening in headphones, ideally, it is an interesting experiment because I took it and split it and made some pretty thick stereo tracks with it. And if you take one headphone off at a time, you can hear the XO doing its thing, because I've got, hey, so let me look back at my chain here so I'm describing it correctly. So I'm going straight into the XO, and then I'm going out to the 1981 DRV. And that is a little more focused on the high end
right.
of things. And then the other section is going out to the Mr. Black High 5, which is a pitch shifter. He calls it a quote-unquote power chord generator, which it definitely is, because it does a you can select an octave up or down and a fifth up or down and right. blend however much yeah. in. So everyone's like, whoa, no, now you don't even need to know how to play guitar to play guitar. And I'm like, I guess, but where it really shines is like you're doing riffs and leads that you could otherwise not be able to do, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, definitely.
But I have most of that going to the low end, and what's interesting is both of these tracks in isolation sound not that good,
right?
They don't like they sure. If you listen to them by themselves, just it's not a full hard pan, it's more of a medium pan, but you'll be able to hear if you take one headphone off at a time while you listen to this how the split actually is going. And yeah, it sounds really, really weird by itself, but I was trying to make the sum of the parts work. And I think what's worth noting is this is just one guitar part. There's no real layering going on other than what's happening in real time. So this is one riff. There's no double tracking. There's none of that. This is just me taking and splitting those out. And then into the amps, I have some spring reverb on one, and one's a little more dry and distorted, but there's some post-processing going on there, but that's what you're hearing. And I think it helps the XO kind of show the power of that split.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, absolutely. I never really thought about it like that as being, I thought about it for like overall tone shaping, but the way you're using it is almost partially to create something that sounds like more than one guitar, which is another sort of interesting take mm-hmm. on how to use the pedal. Let's play the sample, dear listener, so that you can have a listen to what Blake's talking about, and then we'll come back to discuss it in more detail afterwards. Here we go. We'll be right back. That sounds great. The reverb on the amp sounds fantastic. The that Mr. Black is doing such heavy lifting. Those octaves sound brilliant. And I guess I didn't really realize, because I listened to this, dear listener, obviously, before we podcast. I didn't really think about the fact that it was just one thing. I assumed there was like a second layer going on in there as well. So that's it really is a really clever pedal.
Yeah, just one baritone millimetric instrument.
That's what guitar. I was going to ask next. Yeah, it was the millimeter.
Mm-hmm. That's all it was. Humbucker in the bridge. And yeah, I just got it all set up, got it sounding to what I thought sounded cool. Hit record, and that's it. It's very raw. Like it could definitely use some more polishing. I think maybe if I was in listening back with fresh ears, I might have dialed out a little more of the highs, just a little bit. Maybe not on the pedal itself, but maybe doing some EQing in post. But
mate, polishing is for wooden furniture. I thought it sounded great.
All right, I'm glad you liked it. But yeah, that I thought it was a less soundscapey, because that can be a little bit hard to tell what is going where. And I thought this little more percussive, direct, while still having some verb in there, of course, but having a little more percussive riffy thing would let everybody hear the separation a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited about this pedal's release. When this pedal actually comes out, we're not going to have anything to discuss about it on the podcast, because I've talked about it in a row, but that's fine.
it's fine. Sorry, David. Sorry.
But yeah, it's going to be great. And I guess you're going to be able to hear about the XO in more detail on the Tone Mob in the next few weeks.
Yeah, we're going to get into his story, because I don't know it. Kind of know it, but not fully. I didn't hear it straight from the horse's mouth. So
there you go.
We'll get into it.
That'll be exciting. Yes, I shall look forward to that. Okay, well, there it is. There's the the Meris Mercury X and the Great Eastern XO crossover. Those are the two sort of pedals that we want to discuss on this week's podcast. Now we are drawing to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Blake and I are of course going to be heading over onto the Patreon exclusive episode of the podcast. We're going to talk about maybe some of the other pedal brands that I checked out at the Stompbox Deli, look at some of their stuff, but also I want to talk about the question of the week, which surprisingly it seems to always come from John Bai, just because he asks great questions on the Guitar Nerds group, and always cultivates a really interesting discussion. This week it was 8 days ago, so last week John asked, what piece of gear did you really want, then realize it was completely wrong for you when you actually got it? And it's had a bunch of comments, 57 responses on the Facebook group of people talking about theirs. So I thought we'd maybe take a look at some things that didn't work for people that they expected to see if there's any consistency amongst them. And we're going to talk about our own experiences with that as well. Now, before we head off over onto Patreon, you can find us there, dear listener, if you're not already a Patreon subscriber, patreon.com/guitarnerds. You can follow us on Patreon. You can join our Patreon for as little as a dollar a month. But I would like to personally thank our top tier, our $10 tier Patreon supporters, before we finish up this podcast. So thank you very much to Stefan Carlson, to Nicholas Strom, Rocket Rob Patterson, Phil Sadler, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Anton Fryant, Barry Grisbick, Steve Davis, John Conaway, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Hizau Kadowaki, Eric File, Peter Peche, Chris Franklin, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dore, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Bock, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravit. There we are. That's That's the lot. That's the lot of you, dear listeners. Thank you very much. Blake, thank you so much for joining us. It's been so wonderful actually having you on the Guitar Nerds again for the first time in 2024.
I love it.
Well, we thanks for having you. Yes, well, we'll be continuing this podcast anyway on Patreon. Do listen to Tone Mob and Chasing Down. I don't know why I even bother saying that. Of course you listen to those podcasts as well. You're listening to a guitar podcast.
Listen to those, though. Those are non-guitar podcasts.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Of course. Well, thank you very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Later.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.